This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking back at all of last night's Champions League action as both Manchester City and Tottenham seal their places in the Champions League knockout stages. We'll also be looking ahead to tonight's Champions League fixtures, which include Liverpool's game at home against Napoli. A win for Liverpool will see them qualify as group winners in Group E. Also, Chelsea's trip to Valencia, one of the early kickoffs at 5-6. We'll be previewing both of those games. We'll also be talking a bit about Watford. They're one of many clubs rumoured to be wondering whether a change of manager is right. Could they have a third manager of the season before we even get to Christmas? We'll also be talking about Graham Potter, who signed a new extension to his already long contract until 2025. We'll also be talking about temporary substitutions for concussion, which seems like a positive step forward for football. Also talking a bit about Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and where Erling Braut Haaland's future really does lie. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. That number again, 0208 7020 558 if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon. Plenty to be talking about over the next hour. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking a little bit about tonight's Champions League fixtures to come later in the hour, a bit on Watford, as well as some of the other news stories in the Premier League at the moment. But we'll first look back at last night's action. Plenty of storylines coming out of the Champions League and a decent night for English sides, although not the perfect night for both English clubs. Starting off in Group B with Tottenham's game against Olympiacos. Tottenham knew that a win would seal their place in the knockout stages, and they did win, but that doesn't necessarily tell you the whole story. They ended up winning by 4-2, but they were 2-0 down inside the opening 20 minutes. Tottenham's defensive vulnerabilities exposed by a pretty average Olympiacos side that has only got 1 point from 5 group stage games so far. And Tottenham looked all over the place defensively. Jose Mourinho then hauled Eric Dier off and he couldn't have a more apt name for his performance, but it also perfectly summed up Tottenham's performance in the opening 25 minutes as he was hooked off just before the half-hour mark. Christian Eriksen did come on, and the big turning point was just on the verge of half-time in added time at the end of the first half. Dele Alli's goal came from a massive mistake from Olympiacos at the back. How on earth they just didn't clear it? It just was a simple cross across the box, and the centre-half just smashed all the way over the top of the ball, completely missed it, and Dele Alli had one of the easiest finishes he's probably going to have in his career, and that was a big turning point in the second half. 2 goals from Harry Kane, who was the fastest player ever to get to 20 Champions League goals, and a pretty good strike by Serge Aurier as well, meant that in the end, it was an easy night for Tottenham, although I think more should be made of the fact that in Jose's first 2 games, granted he's only been in charge, 7 days now, but he is heralded, or always has been, for how well coached defensively his sides are. And yet, against West Ham on Saturday, who are the most out-of-form team in the Premier League, and then yesterday against Olympiacos, who are a pretty average side at the Champions League level, they've conceded 2 goals in both games and could have actually conceded even more than that. So even though Tottenham are through and they'll be just happy that they are into the knockout stages, and last season they were very fortunate to get to the knockout stages and they did get to the final, and you do need some luck along the way, although I don't think Tottenham will be getting anywhere near the Champions League final. They are through, however, conceding 2 goals in the weekend against West Ham and then 2 goals last night against Olympiacos should be raising the alarm bells at Tottenham. The other game in that group, Red Star Belgrade 0, Bayern Munich 6. Robert Lewandowski scored a hat-trick within 7 minutes. A hat-trick, 4 goals, sorry, in 14 minutes. The fastest 4-goal haul in Champions League history is in from when the first goal was scored to the fourth goal. He could have even scored another one that was ruled out for a handball from Corentin Tolisso in the build-up. So he just has a phenomenal record this season and also in his career in Champions League football. Utterly phenomenal. Bayern Munich, I think they've been one of the most impressive sides. They're 5 wins out of 5, 15 points, 5 points clear of Tottenham, and Bayern Munich host Tottenham at the Allianz Arena in a couple of weeks' time. I still thought this season they would be in a bit of transition, and remember, they've sacked Niko Kovac and they've got Hansi Flick on a temporary basis probably until the end of the season, and yet they're 5 wins from 5, scored 21 goals, conceded just 4. Pretty phenomenal record. Granted, Red Star Belgrade and Olympiacos have been pretty poor, but Bayern Munich have been one of the standout sides in the group stages so far with a 100% record. In Group C, the other English side in action were Manchester City. They knew that if they avoided defeat at home to Shakhtar, they would seal their qualification, and they did manage to do it. However, they didn't win the game. They drew 1-1. Ilkay Gundogan had given Manchester City the lead, but Solomon had equalised just on the 17-minute mark, which meant that City only got a point. It wasn't a great City performance. It was a pretty laboured Manchester City performance, but they do go through, and not only are they through, they are through as the group winners as well. They've got 11 points from their 5 games. Back-to-back draws after 3 successive wins to start off the group, but they're on 11 points. Shakhtar in second on 6, Dinamo Zagreb in third on 5, and Atalanta in fourth on 4 points. So it's a pretty good race for second place, but Manchester City have secured a top spot, so they are through, even though it was a laboured performance and a frustrating draw for Pep Guardiola's side. They are into the knockout stages as group winners in Group C. And also yesterday, if you remember the news, that Manchester City have opened talks with Raheem Sterling over a new contract that would see him go above Kevin De Bruyne as City's highest earner, above the £350,000 a week that Kevin De Bruyne is currently on. The other game in that group, Atalanta 2, Dinamo Zagreb 0. So Atalanta's first win in the Champions League of all time. Obviously, this was their first season in the competition, so a great moment for all of the Atalanta fans. Although, as anyone knows, unfortunately for them, it wasn't in their home ground. It was at the San Siro, as their ground obviously doesn't comply to Champions League rules. In the other games in the other two groups, in Group A, Galatasaray drew 1-1 with Club Brugge in one of the early kickoffs, which meant that before the Real Madrid-PSG game even kicked off, Real Madrid and PSG both secured qualification. Real Madrid went 2-0 up, 2 goals from Karim Benzema, but goals late on from Kylian Mbappe and Pablo Sarabia made it 2-2. Gareth Bale could have scored late on with a free kick that hit the post, although there was a comical situation in the first half where PSG thought they had a penalty and Courtois being sent off. They then reviewed it for the slightest of touches from Idrissa Gana Gay on Marcelo, and no surprise at the Santiago Bernabeu, the referee overturned it and didn't give Courtois a red card and said it was a free kick. It was an utterly ludicrous decision. It does show that the VAR Muppets aren't just located in England, they're located all the way around Europe. And in Group D, one of the two early kickoffs, Lokomotiv Moscow lost 2-0 at home against Bayer Leverkusen. Juventus won 1-0 at home against Atletico Madrid. If you haven't seen Paulo Dybala's free kick, well worth a watch. And it does mean Atletico Madrid have got a bit of pressure heading into their final game. Juventus are through as group winners, but Atletico Madrid have still got a job to do in that final game of the group stages. So that's all of last night's action. As I mentioned, most teams from those groups are already guaranteed to be going through. Real Madrid, PSG will be top of Group A. Real Madrid will be second. In Group B, Bayern Munich will be top. Tottenham will be second. In Group C, Manchester City have already guaranteed top spot. In Group D, Juventus have sealed top spot. Atletico Madrid still need to do a little bit of work, but you'd imagine they will go through as well. Looking then at tonight's Champions League fixtures in Group E, Liverpool host Napoli at Anfield. Liverpool know that 3 points tonight will not only secure a place in the knockout stages, but will secure top spot with one game to go, which is away in Salzburg in a couple of weeks' time. Napoli in a bit of chaos at the moment. Players being fined left, right and centre. They've got a few injuries. It won't be an easy game, though. Liverpool lost 2-0 in Naples in the first game of this Champions League group stage. Last season, if you remember, it was the final game of the group stage at Anfield. And despite Liverpool having a whole host of chances, they were only 1-0 up going into the final stages. And Arkadiusz Milik had a chance inside the penalty area. Alisson pulling off a great save, which meant that Liverpool qualified. And as they all say, the rest is history. Six times Champions League winners. So Liverpool host Napoli at Anfield. As I mentioned, 3 points will not only guarantee qualification from Group E, but it will seal top spot ahead of what is a very, very busy festive period. The opportunity to rotate against Salzburg in a couple of weeks' time could be exactly what Jurgen Klopp wants. The other game in the group is over in Belgium. Genk hosting Salzburg. Genk are bottom with just 1 point. Salzburg in third on four. Liverpool top on 9 points. Napoli just 1 point behind them on eight. In Group H, the other English side, Chelsea, they make the trip to Spain to take on Valencia in one of the two early kickoffs. It's not going to be easy for Chelsea considering they lost to Valencia at home by 1-0 on the opening game week of this season's Champions League group stage. So not an easy game for them. And that group, Group H, is finally poised. Valencia, Chelsea and Ajax all on 7 points. Lille are gone, but the other three all have a good chance. If Chelsea win, they put themselves in a brilliant position. They've got a home game against Lille, which you'd imagine would be 3 points in a couple of weeks' time. So this is huge. If Chelsea win, they're basically through and their qualification will be sealed. Lose in Valencia and things are looking quite a bit trickier for them. The other game in the group, Lille take on Ajax. In Group F, Barcelona take on Borussia Dortmund in what will be Lionel Messi's 700th appearance for Barcelona. He has scored 612 club goals in 699 games, 380 goals ahead of Barcelona's second highest goal scorer of all time. Ridiculous. Messi, I think, has got plenty more goals to come. Wouldn't it be fitting if he were to score a hat-trick at the Nou Camp tonight? In Prague, Slavia Prague take on Inter Milan. Remember, Inter kind of laboured to a 1-1 draw. They were very fortunate to draw at home to Slavia Prague. And in Group G, Zenit, St. Petersburg take on Lyon, and RB Leipzig play Benfica. So that's all the Champions League fixtures to come tonight. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. Obviously, plenty more to come in the hour. We're going to be looking ahead to Liverpool's game against Napoli at Anfield tonight. We're also going to be talking about Watford as well. Could Kike Sanchez Flores be about to go, having only been appointed a matter of months ago? We'll be talking about some of the other news stories in the Premier League, but we'll also be reacting to last night's Champions League action.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Obviously, we've been talking a little bit about last night's Champions League action for the two English sides. They have sealed their qualification into the knockout stages. Manchester City drew 1-1 against Shakhtar, but that was enough to seal top spot. We'll be talking about them in just a few minutes' time. But first, let's react more to Tottenham's win against Olympiacos 4-2 at home, which meant that they go through in Group B, although Bayern Munich will go through as the group winners. Obviously, Tottenham went 2-0 down, but came back to win 4-2. Two goals for Harry Kane, who became the fastest ever to 20 Champions League goals. And earlier on the Breakfast Show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by Simeon Daniel from We Are Tottenham TV. They talked about Tottenham's win against Olympiacos last night, the form, or the resurgence in form, maybe over the last couple of games, of Dele Alli. But they started by asking him about the number of goals that Spurs are currently conceding.
I think it's more than a slight concern that the defence hasn't been sorted out. I know, look, but to be fair, it's Mourinho, he's only been at Spurs now, it's only a couple of games, he's only been here a week, so it's impossible to fully imprint your ideas in that space of time. But I think what he said apparently is that the defence is his main focus on what he's going to be having to fix. And it's clearly, it's borne out in the facts, because at the moment we're leaking goals for fun week in, week out. And the first part of the season, we had a big problem holding on to leads. And that proved on Saturday where we were 3-0 up, and yet we nearly gave that away. And yesterday, I think the first half an hour, it could have been worse than 2-0, in all honesty. That's how bad it was getting. But I think it was a bold move by Jose to make that change after half an hour. And that's something Pochettino probably wouldn't have done under his time at Spurs. So I think there is a concern about the defence, but I think there's no better man to kind of reshape that defence than Jose.
Let's just touch on that. You mentioned the fact that he made the change as early as he did, and in the end it was a very positive change and really changed the flow of the game. So seemingly he's really going out of his way to portray a certain persona, and he's, you know, talking very much about the club and he's being so complimentary about everybody. Can you see this lasting, or do you think at some point the mask might slip and we might see that Mourinho of old?
I think, yeah, it's early days. I think he's maybe this is the face that Mourinho wants to portray because he knows how Pochettino was, how he was as a person, not just as a manager. And he knows that he can't come in like a bull in a china shop straight away, and he has to get the fans back on side because there will be some fans who were not for this appointment. But I think at some point, maybe give it 6 months or maybe next season, the Mourinho of old might start coming to the fore. But I think he's playing it well at the moment, and I think he's using his charm and his charisma to get the fans on side, and I think it's working for sure for the time being. But we have to wait and see what happens.
I want to touch on Dele Alli because he's one that well known. Jose Mourinho's come in and initially he's confronted him in a joking, friendly way, asking him whether he's Dele Alli or Dele Alli's younger, not so talented brother. It looks like we're starting to see Dele Alli again. He was pretty good again last night.
Yeah, I think in the past few games he's been the biggest difference. I think since Jose's come in, he's back to his old self. He really is back to the tricks are starting to come off for him a bit more. He's starting to make more of an impact in the final third, getting the goals and assists, those late runs into the box. I think in Pochettino's final months or maybe even year, Dele was kind of playing a more reserved role. Kind of sitting in the centre mid, kind of that number eight role, kind of having to track back a lot more and support the attack as well. But I think under Jose, he's put him in the number 10 role a lot further forward, and that obviously suits him a lot better. Obviously, he's come back from injuries and whatnot, which he's had over the last year or so, which has probably hampered his progress. Mm. But Jose, I think, has clearly got the belief back in him and that confidence back in him that he can be the player he was a couple of years ago. And I think the things he's doing on the pitch, absolutely fantastic. Every time he's getting the ball, you think something's going to happen, and that hasn't been the case for the past year with Dele. And I think if he carries on this form, no doubt about it, he'll be back in the England squad. He'll be going to the Euros, and I think he'll be full of confidence again. And I think this is the Dele we love to see. That guy is full of tricks, who's getting on the end of crosses, who's creating things. And he's a joy to watch when he's in the mood he was in last night.
So that was Simeon Daniel from We Are Tottenham TV talking about Tottenham's win against Olympiacos last night. Dele Alli seems to be in decent form, but it's only a couple of games. So people shouldn't be getting too carried away thinking Dele Alli's back to where he was a couple of years ago. He's got a lot of work to do before he starts getting back to where everyone thought he was 18 months ago, when he was seen as one of not just England's brightest young players, but one of Europe's probably brightest young players. And it's been a long time out of form. So a couple of games doesn't just completely change things. Also, I was saying this while we were listening to that I find it remarkable that with a game to go, Tottenham have qualified from this group, having been utterly annihilated 7-2 against Bayern Munich, drawn 2-2, throwing a 2-goal lead away at Olympiacos, going 2-0 down inside 20 minutes at home to Olympiacos, and yet they're into the knockout stages with one more game left. I think that says more about how awful Red Star Belgrade and Olympiacos have been, but it seems strange, but I don't know whether Tottenham fans will really care about that. Obviously, Bayern Munich will go through as group winners. Tottenham will go through in second on December 11th. Obviously, at the Allianz Arena, Bayern Munich will host Tottenham. Obviously, Bayern Munich beat them 7-2. And that was probably the beginning of the end for Mauricio Pochettino after that moment. So, Tottenham through after that 4-2 win against Olympiacos. The other side in action last night, English side in action, were Manchester City. They drew 1-1 at home against Shakhtar, even though it was a frustrating, laboured draw. It does seal top spot for them. And earlier on the Breakfast Show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie, they were joined by the former Manchester City and Brighton midfielder Gordon Smith. They did touch on Graham Potter, who signed that new contract extension at Brighton that will keep him there until 2025. But they started by asking Gordon about his views on City's performance last night against Shakhtar.
I watched it and I didn't think it was that impressive. The only thing I could think about in their favour was the fact that, you know, it was almost the qualifications almost certain from the group, and you know, but they, you know, they played well at times, but they're just not not nearly playing well enough, I don't think, at times as well. I mean, they're still scoring goals, they've got a good capability of scoring, but even if you look at the league form this season, I mean, they've lost three games, and you know, you look at the teams that are sitting near the top, even Wolves have only lost two sort of thing. So it's you're looking at a scenario there where they're not in the form that's required in order to be challenging again this year for the league title. They need to pick up on things because Liverpool are looking very strong.
Is this a case, and Pep has kind of done this over the years, where he uses his resources quite cleverly, where, for instance, he wouldn't necessarily put everybody out there and then winning 6-7-0 in a game like that when they don't necessarily need to. So they'll do just enough, knowing that, as you said, qualification was as good as guaranteed, and now he'll then use his resources, which where they need it at the moment, obviously in the league, and ordinarily they do come good second half of the season.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, they do need to have a run, as I say, because, you know, they won one of the last four games, one victory in the last four games. Yeah. But the thing about it is, you're looking at the scenario there where, you know, Liverpool up there winning week after week. Now, Man City have lost already, as you know, to Norwich and Wolves this season. But then they did lose to Liverpool, to be fair, which was a big game. But they do need to pick up, because if Liverpool keep this sort of form going, they've got a good squad as well. City have got a great squad in terms of the talent they have. Mainly the talent is obviously in the attacking sense. They do play a lot of nice football and they can score goals. Aguero, a key player, De Bruyne, you know, these are top-class players. De Silva as well, Silva's a super player. So they really do need to pick up their form again. Maybe the fact is that, you know, that they're just like building towards this season, and I hope that when they have a little bit of a run later on, they can come with a surge and then begin to pick up on Liverpool and Leicester, who are above them at the moment.
I want to talk to you about Brighton as well. Interesting story that's come out. Graham Potter with a new contract, which keeps him at the club until 2025, which he's made a solid start. I know I spoke to a couple of Brighton staff, and I know they're really happy with the way in which they're playing, and there's certainly progress at the club. But he has only been there a few months. I found it a little bit odd that they've given him a new deal already. What was your thoughts?
I agree with you totally, because I think, you know, one of the things in football, he had a three-year contract, I think, as it was, you know, and then you're saying, well, okay, we'll judge him after a season at least and see how it goes. But, you know, to get be 6 months there and all of a sudden get a new contract, I think for the next 6 years, I think it is now. So I was quite astonished by that, because although you have to say, I think the difference is that at times that they were up where they are now in the league last season, and they're certain they were up there. So the thing about it is, you know, it's not as if they've suddenly turned it around and they're playing fantastically well, and, you know, they're not doing a Leicester City at the moment. They're holding on there, they're mid-table. It's going to be tough for them to avoid dropping into the lower half of the league. I know people are saying they've played good football, and I know that there's no doubt about it that Potter's considered to be, you know, a coach, and he's got a lot going for him in terms of, you know, his experience. I mean, didn't do a lot at Swansea in a short period there, but he had a fantastic record before that in Sweden, as you might know, where he took a team from the fourth tier of Swedish football into the top tier and then into Europe. So he's definitely got the talent. But the thing about it is, I'm quite surprised, as you're saying, guys, he's getting a deal with this, a big deal, a long deal, you know, so early into his tenure at Brighton.
That was the former Manchester City and Brighton midfielder Gordon Smith talking about City's laboured performance against Shakhtar, but they are through as group winners from Group C. And also Brighton, who, as was being mentioned there, has signed a new contract at Brighton. His original contract was until 2023, signed a two-year contract extension until 2025. This is only 6 months after being appointed as the new manager of Brighton to replace Chris Hughton. And to me, it's just a sign that they are probably just protecting their asset. It seems a bit strange. I think Brighton have done better than I thought, and they're in a solid position. They're playing better football, I think, than they were under Chris Hughton. But it feels like, especially with what's anticipated with all the movement in the Premier League with a manager merry-go-round, maybe it's just protecting their asset, that if someone wanted to come in for Graham Potter, then other teams would have to pay a huge amount of compensation to get him out. So a bit of a strange one, but shows their faith in their manager. Just a couple of other lines to bring you. On the back of the Times today, reporting that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has shelved contract talks with Arsenal over concerns that Arsenal are not going to finish in the top four, and there is no way that the Gunners will be finishing top four. Obviously, Unai Emery's position is under real threat. Barcelona are supposedly considering a move for the striker during the January transfer window. Also looking ahead to the January transfer window are Manchester United. They are apparently expected to launch a bid to sign Erling Braut Haaland from Salzburg when the January transfer window opens. Supposedly, any deal would cost in excess of £60 million. He's been touted around all of Europe. He scored 26 goals in 18 games for Salzburg so far this season. He would become the first teenager actually to score in five successive Champions League games if he finds the net tonight, although I think the rumour is that he might not be fit enough to play tonight. I believe RB Leipzig have first refusal on him, and maybe a move to Germany to play for Leipzig over the last couple of seasons would potentially benefit him more, and I'm sure he would have the choice of anyone. And even though Manchester United are still a massive club, why on earth would he go to Manchester United when he could literally choose pretty much anyone in Europe? And another one, which is a positive step forward for football, is the fact that temporary substitutions for footballers suspected of being concussed are likely to become compulsory for next summer's Euro 2020s and potentially then for next season's Premier League. It's a move that I think has been a long time in coming, that I think football is perhaps backwards in the way that it approached concussion. Remember the scenes, I think it was in the Champions League last season, where Jan Vertonghen went off and he was looked completely out of it, threw up on the side of the pitch and was allowed to come back on. Now, he went off, but there is no way that Jan Vertonghen should have been allowed to go back on. There's this obsession with, and especially the City rule with players having to go off and then come back on, that actually I think this is a really positive step forward, taking concussion a little bit more seriously and giving time to have proper assessments like we have in rugby, where we have the HIA, the head injury assessment, that it gives them time to make a full decision, and also they're not impeded or affected by then going down to 10 men. I think it's a really positive step and has been perhaps a long time coming in football. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking Watford later in the hour, but up next, we'll be looking ahead to Liverpool's game against Napoli tonight.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We've been talking about last night's Champions League action. Let's look ahead to tonight's action. One of the two English sides in action are Liverpool. They host Napoli at Anfield, knowing that 3 points will secure top spot in Group E. I'm delighted to say we are joined by Richard Buxton, Merseyside football journalist. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Richard. Napoli are seemingly in crisis mode at the moment. All sorts going on with players being fined left, right and centre. Jurgen Klopp, though, has indicated this perhaps makes them a more dangerous animal. Do you think that Jurgen Klopp's got a point, or is he just playing the game?
I think there's some grounds to saying that they're going to be dangerous, because they've got a point to prove, and we've seen teams who are under siege and under pressure have obviously come up with the results in previous instances. But it was a very surreal atmosphere last night when Napoli had their press conference at Anfield. Their press officer came out and said that they wouldn't be taking anything that wasn't related to the game of the question. So clearly that's a big factor in the Italian media tried to allude to it when he spoke to Carlo Ancelotti, but he wasn't having any of it, and neither were the club. And it's a very strange situation, but it's one that Liverpool probably have to be mindful of, because, as I say, these teams, when they're under a bit of pressure and when things aren't going great, they do have a tendency to pull out results.
These two sides know each other very well from the last couple of seasons. Obviously, they were in the same group last season at Anfield in last season's Champions League on the final game week of the group stages. Liverpool were 1-0 up, should have been 6 or 7-0 up. And later on, Alisson had to put off a save. If Milik had scored, that would have knocked Liverpool out and therefore wouldn't have resulted in Liverpool winning the Champions League last season. So even though Liverpool should have won comfortably last season, they'll be wary of this side in which Liverpool have lost both games in Naples over the last 18 months.
Yeah, and you know, that save you mentioned about Alisson making in the end, that really did change the course of history, because that gave Liverpool a renewed chance of belief. They went on and won the Champions League, obviously, but also in the Premier League, it gave them that spark to kick on and you know, accumulate that really good run of points at the end of 2018. which unfortunately unravelled a few weeks later. But it definitely inspired belief. But in terms of what to expect from Napoli this time round, I think Liverpool are probably going to be more guarded than they were last season. I think they had a tendency to try and outscore and blow teams away. And we saw in the game last December that Sadio Mane had a few chances, and if those had gone in, that really would have altered the narrative about how close Liverpool came to dropping out of the Champions League. So I think the game in Naples earlier in the season was a wake-up call because of how Liverpool were punished for switching off. And the players before the game had said to the media, we can't switch off again and we won't switch off again. And unfortunately, they did.
Before we talk more specifically about some of the team news, as I mentioned, if Liverpool win tonight, not only will they seal qualification, they'll seal top spot as well. And that's also, we're thinking about 2 weeks' time when Liverpool travel to Salzburg during what is a really busy period where Liverpool play a ridiculous number of fixtures over the next 6 or 7 weeks. Does that just kind of increase the importance of tonight's game, that if Liverpool can win, they will seal top spot and therefore, obviously, they'll still want to win and finish the group stage with a win in Salzburg, but it just means that Jurgen Klopp will be able to rotate in a couple of weeks' time knowing that top spot in this group is sealed?
Yeah, and I think the importance of qualifying with a game to spare can't be understated. Liverpool obviously have a very, very tough run of fixtures in December between the Premier League. They've obviously got this Carabao Cup quarter-final where they're going to have to field a sort of half-strength team and the FIFA Club World Cup. So the games are coming thick and fast. I think it averages out about one every 3 days at the moment heading into this run of games. So Jurgen Klopp will be determined to try and get the win on the board tonight and hopefully then that puts Liverpool in a good position for the knockout stages. And also, and as you say, they can rest players for the Salzburg game.
One man that's likely to come back into the starting lineup this evening is Mo Salah. Obviously, he was on the bench on Saturday. There were doubts over whether he'd even be involved at all against Crystal Palace, having been pictured in a boot during the international break. He was an unused substitute during that game. Do you think it's an absolute certainty in your eyes that he will start tonight? And is there a concern that after that tackle by Hamza Chowdhury, which feels like a number of weeks ago now, that this ankle injury isn't getting any better and there's a risk that he might have to have surgery on it?
It's possible he might need surgery on it, but at the moment it seems to be a case of Liverpool just managing it properly and not burning him out. As you say, he was on the bench against Crystal Palace on Saturday but didn't start. He has been used semi-sparingly in the Champions League. He started against Genk in the last round and came off. And it showed, it's all about getting his confidence up at the moment. And I think probably, I don't think he'll need surgery just yet, but I think maybe come the end of December, maybe when you're looking at that mid-February break that's coming in, they might look at scheduling something there. But it's not just Salah who's had a few ankle problems. Andy Robertson alluded to his own ones in the press conference yesterday, and I don't know if it's the way Liverpool are playing or it's just an unfortunate coincidence, but I mean, a couple of players do seem to be getting these sorts of injuries, and it's something that Jurgen Klopp's obviously going to have to bear in mind with the tough run of games ahead.
One man that's still out with an injury is John Matip. He's still missing with a knee injury. I think the suggestion when he first got ruled out that he might be back by this point, he's still not back. Is there a growing concern that the injury might be more serious than was first thought?
I think losing Matip for the period that Liverpool have is massive for them because he's been such a huge influence on games in the early part of the season. Probably one of the best performers, especially in defence, alongside Virgil van Dijk. It was probably a close call between the two as to who was the better player in that position. So him being out, it's put pressure on the depth of the squad, and Joe Gomez and Dejan Lovren have been taking it in turns. But when you look at they've got coming up, obviously they've got the Club World Cup, they've got the Merseyside Derby, and you know, a lot of tough games at the start of next year. They need Matip back fit and as soon as possible to get that consistency, to get that confidence back, to really get back to the form he showed at the early part of the season.
One man, though, that has been in good form, you mentioned his name there, Dejan Lovren, since John Matip got injured. There were games against Leicester and Manchester City when I looked to see what our team news was, and I thought, oh my goodness, Dejan Lovren starting today. This could be a huge risk. Now, he has performed in those games, but the problem has always been with Dejan Lovren's career at Liverpool is he has the ability to have fantastic games where even against brilliant teams like Manchester City, he can turn up. But at the same time, the worry is that even though he might have been playing well recently, he could have an absolute shocker at any moment.
Yeah, that seems to be symptomatic of Lovren's Anfield career, really. He'll always do something brilliant and then he'll offset it with something idiotic, whether it's with a mistake or with a soundbite. I mean, the one that springs to mind for me, it seems to be that statement he made after Croatia reached the World Cup final, where he said he was one of the best defenders in the world. And let's be honest, he's a good defender, but he's nowhere near the standard of players that he was comparing himself to. And I just think that with Lovren, there is always that tendency to make a mistake through when he's pulling the pressure. I think that's something that a lot of opponents seem to prey upon. But he's looked good in the past few games. And as you say, against Manchester City, he really put a foot wrong. But there is always that fear that maybe there's a mistake in him here. And you just don't know when it's going to happen. And I think that's probably why it's imperative that Joel Matip's back as soon as possible, because if Lovren is going to be leading the charge when we've got some of the tougher games in the title running, you don't really want to be having Lovren in there, because there is always that potential that he's going to make more mistakes than Matip or even Joe Gomez.
And just one final one then, Richard, looking ahead to tonight's game, what would you say is the absolute key for me looking at it, that the midfield is going to be crucial? Napoli are expected to potentially go 4-4-2, so they're going to try and load up midfield. So the role of the likes of Fabinho, Henderson, Wijnaldum, and maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain, if he starts, that feels like a crucial area. What would you say is absolutely key? Maybe looking at the battle between the front three and Koulibaly, who was absolutely fantastic for Napoli in the first game of the group stages.
Yeah, Koulibaly was brilliant in the first game. He really did keep a tight leash on Mane and Salah. I think one of the bigger issues for Liverpool is it's just not switching off. I mean, I alluded to it before. The players had drilled into their minds that they weren't going to get undone again like they had done in the first game in Napoli last season when they were over there this time round, and it happened. So clearly, you know, staying on your feet to the whistle and playing right through and not having those lapses in concentration late on, because we know how tight this group is, especially with the caliber of teams in there. I think probably you'd only say Genk are the ones who are probably the weak link in Liverpool have come through those ties comfortably. But with Salzburg up ahead and with Napoli again, Liverpool cannot afford to switch off, and especially at Anfield, because when you switch off, the Anfield crowd really let you know what they think.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Richard. That was Richard Buxton, Merseyside football journalist, looking ahead to Liverpool's game. They host Napoli at Anfield tonight, knowing a win seals top spot. And Richard talking about not switching off, and a look at Liverpool so far this season. And people have been talking about how we've maybe not looked quite as good defensively and wondering what's the difference between last season and this season. I don't think there is a big difference. The only thing I would say is that it's just momentary lapses in concentration. Then I think back to the beginning of the season, there were games against Norwich, Arsenal, Southampton, where we'd won the game, but just 70 minutes into the game, there was one person that switched off and could see a silly goal. It happened against Genk away in the Champions League, where we were 4-0 up. And in the 90th minute, and this goes back to Dejan Lovren again, he just does something stupid on the right-hand side, just dives in, gets done, and then Genk score. And it, even though Liverpool won the game 4-1, it takes a little bit off the gloss off a win like that. So it's just a case of momentary lapse in concentration, just one person switching off, which at Champions League level results in you conceding goals. So that's the key for Liverpool tonight, because Napoli will look, I imagine, to play on the counter-attack tonight. And the game 12 months ago, where we should have been, I mean, my goodness, 5 or 6 nil up, the number of chances that likes of Sadio Mane spurned in that game, and then obviously Alisson kind of steps up with a huge save right at the end of that game. It shows, without us being clinical and just a momentary lapse in concentration, that could have been us out of the Champions League. So at this level, it's massively important that as a defensive unit, as a team, you don't switch off once, because against good teams like Napoli and the players they've got going forward, although they're going to be without Lorenzo Insigne tonight, they will punish you if you make mistakes. It happened in Naples in the last 2 years, this season and last season, just one or two lapses in concentration and you can see goals. So it's important for Liverpool tonight that they don't lose concentration. A win for the Reds at Anfield will secure top spot in Group E with a game to go, where Liverpool will travel to Salzburg in a couple of weeks' time. The other English side in action tonight, Chelsea face a tough game over in Spain. They take on Valencia. It's an early kickoff at 5-6. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. Up next, we'll be turning our attention to more Premier League matters and talking all things Watford.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking all things Watford now. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Jacob Culshaw, founder of WD18 YouTube channel. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jacob. Well, Watford are a number of clubs that are considering, I suppose, the manager's position. Kike Sanchez-Flores, he's going to continue to be backed for now. Are you of the thought that what's the point if you're going to think like that? You might as well make that decision now because you're already thinking about it. Or are you happy that they're allowing him to have a bit more time to save his job?
Afternoon, Kieran. Yeah, no, I'm certainly siding with the first option. Kike Sanchez-Flores shouldn't be at Watford Football Club, really. Whether he's to blame for the way Watford have the results have gone since he's come back to the club, he had a really tough run of fixtures. Obviously, it was a bit of a change when he came in for the Arsenal game. Obviously, the awful result at home to Manchester City. Away at Manchester City, conceding 8 goals. But to only secure one Premier League win, that being Norwich away, a win we really should be expecting against a team, no disrespect, like Norwich.
I was going to ask you, obviously, we can say it with hindsight, but was a return for Kike Sanchez-Flores the right decision, or should Watford have gone down a different path with a different manager?
Of course, the Norwich win was our first Premier League win of this season, and it was a win we expected, but I would have made the change after that. We had the 2-week international break, but according to The Athletic, Watford didn't have any candidate to line up to replace him, so we do have to stick with Kike Sanchez-Flores. It's understood that he will remain for the Southampton game on Saturday, but I just think, regardless of the result, he's got to go. And is he solely responsible for the for the poor form? No. It dates back to as I mentioned when I come on in, the recruitment in the summer not being good enough, and ultimately that is going to cost us. I do feel like we're only heading one way, and that's to the Championship, unless a change is made. Someone who can actually galvanise the squad, the supporters, because at the moment it's really flat, Kieran.
If Watford are to make that change, then Jacob, whenever it comes, you'd imagine it will come. I can't imagine the Pozzo family to just sit there not making a decision. Who would be your suggestion to come in? Is it a case of it's a short-term fix at all costs and it's about staying up, and so even if it is a short-term manager, then that's the fact? Or do Watford have to be thinking more long-term than that and thinking about the bigger picture?
It's tough to really to put some names out there. I'm a big fan of the Bristol City manager, Lee Johnson. I think he's a young, up-and-coming coach. And I think the thing is with Watford at the moment is, I think we kind of know our destiny. I think it is pretty much guaranteed that we'll be going down. So maybe giving it to a young coach to build a new squad, giving him the rest of the season. If we stay up, that's a bonus. But then rebuilding the Championship. It's getting to that point now, Kieran. I'm just thinking, you know what? And I think a number of Watford fans are thinking it is pretty much done. So Lee Johnson is probably one of them, but certainly no one like a Tony Pulis or a Sam Allardyce. That's just backwards. And although it's a short-term fix, at the end of the day, no difference really to Kike Sanchez-Flores. They're supposed to have the same desired effect. So maybe a manager like Lee Johnson would definitely be a suitable fit, in my opinion.
What would you say? You mentioned how Kike Sanchez-Flores can't be singled out as the only one to blame for this slump in form and the position that they're in. But you think only 6-7 months ago, Watford were 7th place in the Premier League, moving on in the FA Cup towards the final, and things were all good. And towards the end of last season, after Watford got to the FA Cup final, things started to go a bit pear-shaped, and it's continued into this season. So what realistically has been the change between earlier on in 2019 and now?
The answer is the lack of change. The lack of change in the squad. Javi Gracia should have really been backed. It is honestly recruitment that has let us down. The board have made a real shambles of the season. Obviously, we had a great season under Javi, reaching our highest ever Premier League finish, the FA Cup final. Obviously, it didn't end well, but Javi Gracia wasn't backed correctly in that transfer window. He wasn't given the suitable resources to build on what was a really successful season. but of course it didn't start well, and they felt a change had to be made. They panicked, and they brought in Flores, and it was a pretty knee-jerk appointment. So it dates back to the summer, and this summer could prove to be one of the most fatal in the club's history. And of course, we did invest in this Miller Sar, but we've had an ageing and weakening defence since we come back into the Premier League. It hasn't really improved since 2015 in Flores' first spell. So in answer to your question, it is the lack of change, the lack of additions, the lack of reinforcement in key areas, particularly the defence, that I think will ultimately cost us this season.
Looking back then at last weekend, a 3-0 defeat at home against Burnley. Now, Burnley have made a good start to the season. They're currently sixth in the table, but does that just did Saturday's game just highlight where Watford are at, that the situation that they found themselves in, that at home they didn't even score a goal and they conceded three and lost 3-0 against a side that notoriously don't tend to travel that well?
Yeah, it epitomised the season really, Kieran. On Saturday, easy goals and goals that can be quite easily avoidable. Defensively, not good enough, and going forward, really poor. And as I mentioned, when that's down, I think that is down, I was saying, up under Kike, but confidence is so low at the moment. We've got a number of injuries. It just seems like everything's kind of going against us at the moment. But yeah, on Saturday, three really soft goals, two coming from free kicks, one coming from a penalty. It's just not good enough, and all goals could have been avoided had the defending been better. So, yeah, but at the same time, we're not offering a lot going forward. So the best we were going to get is a 0-0 draw, and we've seen draws against Bournemouth, Spurs. Spurs, okay, as an exception, but Sheffield United as well. We're just struggling to find wins when we're not doing a lot up top, and we're leaking goals for fun. It's not a good combination.
And looking ahead to the next four games, it doesn't necessarily get a lot easier for Watford fans. Obviously, a huge game on Saturday evening away at Southampton. But then after that, Leicester away, Crystal Palace at home, Liverpool away. Things aren't exactly getting any easier for Hornets.
No, really, really difficult Christmas spell, actually. I think on Saturday, as I mentioned, I think Kike Sanchez-Flores should leave the club regardless of the result. But then, as you mentioned, Leicester, Palace. The next three games could really seal our fate, if I'm honest with you. Liverpool, Manchester United over Christmas as well. Difficult games. I think the change should have been made after Norwich. Being made too late. And unfortunately, I feel like our fate is sealed.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jacob. That was Jacob Coleshaw, founder of WD18 YouTube channel, talking not very positively about things at Watford. It does look pretty bleak for them at the moment. Jacob already feels perhaps that things are already looking like Watford are going to go down. The next three games could really seal their fate. They're currently bottom of the table, 8 points in. They've only got that one win, which was away at Norwich just before the international break. That loss at home against Burnley on the weekend, I think, is a damning indictment, a reality check for where Watford are, that they didn't look like scoring at home and conceding soft goals, conceding three at home against Burnley, being easily beaten by Sean Dyche's side, is not a good sign. And as I said, you think 7-8 months ago, Watford were one of the best sides outside the top six. And by the end of 2019, Watford fans are resigned to the fact that there is a real distinct possibility that they'll be playing Championship football next season. And for Jacob, Lee Johnson would be up near the top of his list as a man for the long term. There's no point thinking about short-term fixes. It's about thinking about the long-term future for Watford, and not an easy run for them. A trip to Southampton, which is a massive game. That's a huge game in the relegation battle. Then Leicester away, Palace at home, Liverpool away. Doesn't get easier for Watford, and it's going to be a tough run for them. Could their fate be sealed by Christmas?
This is Love Sport.